We just finished the Shabbos reading all of the parshiyos about the story of Mechiras Yosef. I want to talk about that story, and from that story, I want to talk about a more general issue. In the story of Mechiras Yosef, so the story has several climaxes. Of course, the main climax is the denouement is when Yosef reveals himself to the brothers and says, "Ani Yosef." But then there's another emotional climax a little bit later, when Yaakov and Yosef are finally reunited. The Torah describes how Yosef finds his chariot and he goes and he sees his father and he falls on his father's neck, and he cries more, "Vayef kol tzavarei oif." And as we all know, the pasuk, it conspicuously fails to say anything about Yaakov crying. Yosef cries, and Yaakov doesn't cry. And the question discusses, why doesn't Yaakov cry? Yosef, in the same way Yosef is crying, why isn't Yaakov crying? Parenthetically, not what I want to talk about, parenthetically, I saw a very beautiful word, very true word from Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. He writes as follows, he says, why is Yosef crying? Should be happy. They're finally reunited after all these years. What's he crying about? Why is Yosef crying? I asked this in Shul. It's interesting how few people had an answer. He should be happy. That should have been a cake, a celebration. They're finally reunited after all these years. What's the cry about? Especially on a human level, why are they crying? What? They were tears of happiness. No, I think there's another reason why. I'm not looking for anything deep metaphysical, just human emotion. Why are they crying after all these years?
Someone's overcome by emotion, they cry.
Okay. I'm not being recorded, right?
We could stop it and start.
No, it doesn't matter. I was going to say something about Odysseus and Penelope, but if I'm being recorded, maybe I'll ask you. why are they crying after all these years? I think the obvious answer is they're crying because they're crying for all the years that they lost, all the years that they weren't together. 22 years they were separated. They're never going to get that back. Those are 22 years that they'll never have together. So Rav Hirsch writes very beautifully. He says Yaakov didn't cry because Yaakov had already cried for 22 years. 22 years. Yaakov, all he did, he was home and he was crying that he's separated from Yosef. So he was cried out. He didn't have any more tears left to cry. Yosef, all those 22 years, had a very busy life. Yosef was very active. He was going to Mitzrayim and so on. Yosef hadn't devoted 22 years to crying for the fact that he's not with his... I'm sure he cried, he was sad about it sometimes. But he had other things going on in his life now, and they're finally reunited. So he's overtaken by the thought of the 22 years with his father that he doesn't have, that he's never going to have again. So Yosef is overcome by emotion. Yaakov doesn't have any more tears to cry. You know, that's on a human level. That's a very beautiful insight. Of course, Chazal says something else entirely. You all know Chazal Rashi brings that Yaakov didn't cry because Yaakov was busy saying Kriya Shema. Everybody asks, why is Yaakov now, at this juncture, why is Yaakov saying Kriya Shema? So that's what I want to talk about. Why it's Dafka now, at this point, that Yaakov says Kriya Shema. Start from somewhere else entirely. You know, you read the newspapers any time these last 7 years. The story that's in every day, it's the same story. It's not in so many words. The story of the period of time that we're living in is it's an epic of religious war. You know, the world now is caught up. It's very hard for the world to come to grips with. Very hard, especially for the West, to come to grips with the idea that there's a religious war going on. The last time there was a religious war in Europe was in the 16th century. when Europe was torn apart by religious war. This is educated on it. In the 16th century, Europe was ripped apart by religious war. And it was so devastating, it was so destructive of life and of property and just horrendous, that was really the end. Europe never again engaged in purely religious wars. There were wars that maybe had a religious backdrop also, but just a war over religion. That was never seen again. Today it's very hard for the world to come to, for the West to come to grips with the idea that we could be in the middle of another religious war. It's a very horrific, very difficult kind of thought. The religious wars I want to talk about, the religious wars in the 16th century, were fought over all kinds of issues, theological issues, most of which don't have a lot to do with us. They're very, from our point of view, it's haloloi bevarizara, valoloi bevarizara, it doesn't really bear on us. But among the set of issues that were being debated then on the battlefields of Europe, was one issue that wasn't specifically a Christian issue, but it's a general religious issue that Bahavil, our Golem, also have talked about and grappled with. And it's an issue that's really a very old issue. It's an issue that we had in the Middle Ages already by the Rishonim. But in the 16th century, and Bahavil by the Golem as well, in the 16th century, it was framed in a new way. Both by the Goyim, we'll see in a minute, by the Jews as well. And the issue is, the conflict between HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge of the, let's put it this way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge of the future and free will. And that's an old issue. And you have a lot about it in the Middle Ages. The occupied people's attention. We have it by the Rishonim. But in time of the Rishonim, in the Middle Ages, it was framed basically as an issue of knowledge, as a cognitive issue, if you want, or maybe better put, an epistemological issue. So, for example, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, and more at length in the Maor Nebuchim, the Rambam frames the question as follows. Baruch Hu has knowledge of the future. How could Baruch Hu have knowledge of the future? You can only have knowledge of something that's true. You can only have knowledge of true propositions. Knowledge of the future, propositions about the future are not true or false. Propositions about the future are a contingent on what's going to happen in the future. You can't say something happened in the past, proposition about the past. The World Trade Center was knocked down on 9/11. Let's have it true or false. Either it happened or it didn't happen. We can say about that proposition is true or it's not true. Proposition about the future, the Empire State Building is going to be knocked down next week. That's, can't say that's true or it's false. It's contingent. Depends what happens. I hope it's not going to happen, but it's contingent on what happens in the future. So it's not a true or a false proposition. So a human being, this is an Aristotelian problem. A human being can only have a knowledge of a true proposition. Can't have knowledge of something that's only contingent because it's not true or it's not false. How could a Kadosh Baruch Hu have knowledge about the future when the future propositions about the future are only contingent? That's what the Rambam in the Maor Nebuchim. Nechos Tshuva talks about it more of a kitzer. In the Maor Nebuchim, he's marach. He said that's the way he frames the problem. How can a Kadosh Baruch Hu have knowledge of contingent propositions? Knowledge can only be had of true propositions. Very Aristotelian way of phrasing the problem. And the Rambam basically answers that the categories that we apply to human knowledge don't apply to Kadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge. Kadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge is different, fundamentally different. And therefore, the categories of thought that we use in understanding human knowledge don't apply to the Rebbeinu Shlomo's knowledge. That's how the Rambam deals with the problem. The point is, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva has the same thing. The point being that the question is framed as being a question about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge. It's an epistemological question. How can we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has knowledge about the future, and yet the future remains contingent and remains open to all kinds of possibilities? And Lahavdil by the Goyim also, I think this is the way the question is generally framed. In the 16th century, the question starts to be framed in a different way. I'm talking now by the Goyim, but we'll see in a minute Lahavdil by the Eden. The question begins to be framed as a tension or a conflict between the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice on the one hand and his omnipotence on the other. Meaning as follows. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just, then if he's just, as Tanakh indicates over and over again, Shayfet Kolores Layase Mishpo. Then he does good to good people. And he does evil to he repays evil with punishment. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts to what we do. We behave in a certain way, then it's only just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should behave towards us in a way that's appropriate. We behave in a different way, then it's only just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should behave in a way that's different. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be just, has to react to our behavior. That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reacting to us. So who's really in the driver's seat? In a way, we are. Because we determine by our behavior how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to behave, how he's going to, what he's going, how he's going to treat us. That's just to say otherwise, to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't care about what we do and he just treats us the same regardless or arbitrarily, that would undermine the idea of his justice. On the other hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent. He can do whatever he wants. If he's omnipotent, how can his behavior be constrained by what we do? This is the way it was framed by the Gaon. Anybody knows anything about the history of the time? So it's very interesting that, I'm not a historian, but it's interesting. I think that you have also now, perhaps for the first time explicitly, you have also by us, you have a similar question being raised. Fine, by the Ramchal, Moshe. Ramchal and Derech Hashem, he raises basically this question in slightly different terms, but he raises the following question. He says, he's marach about it. He says, on the one hand, Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world according to one of the Korei Emunah, according to the canons of Schar Va'Onesh. Goyim Elish Chesed Kimefoloi, like we say, Noisim L'Rosh Yerok Yerish Osoi. Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world according to our deserts. We do mitzvahs, then he behaves towards us one way. If we do Chalil Averis, then he behaves towards us in another way. He's always reacting to the way we behave. And that makes it, and therefore the Hanhoga really goes, the direction of the Hanhoga is it starts with us and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts. And that puts our actions in at the center of the whole Hanhoga of the world. Chaim V'loshim Nefesh Chaim is marach about this, that every little action that a person does has cosmic repercussions because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's behavior towards the whole world and how much Shefa flows into the world, everything's governed by our behavior. If we do mitzvahs, if we learn Torah, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Baruch into the world. If we do Averis, then it's Makakal, and then the Baruch Hu doesn't flow into the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Keseder reacting to our behavior. So when Hanhoga is really flowing, we are determining what that Hanhoga is going to be. We're determining how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to run the world based on our behavior, based on the idea of Schar Va'Onesh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu he does Mishpat, he does justly. We don't understand, we don't know the whole algorithm. We know this problem, Tzadik Ra'alei, Rosh Hashanah, I'm not going into that. But the basic idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts to us. We by our behavior, determine how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to behave towards us. Esther Amchal, how does that work with the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we're determining everything, then how do we understand the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has certain goals for the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings about? I mean, all of Sifrei HaNeviim are full of the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is what the future is going to be, and the whole world is going to have to lead to that point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Menavid is going to be in Meisim Mashiach, there's going to be... We don't have to look so far as in Meisim Mashiach, Achar Sayomim, even in the more close future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Menavid Yassidus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu... The world's not Hefker. The world's not just that we can mess up the whole world, we can take the world and go to hell in a handbasket. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain goals for the world towards which he drives the world. But that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is driving everything. That we're HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's proactive. So how does that work? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacting always to us? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always reacting to us, then l'mashal, how can HaKadosh Baruch Hu guarantee there's going to be a Yemais Mashiach? Maybe we're never going to deserve it. Maybe we're going to mess things up so much. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know it's Mavtech that there will be. How do we reconcile these two things? Talk about Shibud Mitzrayim. I don't know if Chal himself talks about Shibud Mitzrayim, but I do want to talk about it. Shibud Mitzrayim, Kodesh Baruch Hu's Manabi, he tells Avraham Avinu there's going to be Shibud Mitzrayim. Geri Yezerach HaBeres Lelehem. There's going to be, we're going to go down to Mitzrayim. That's a Klal Yisrael are going to be created in that crucible. There's a Kodesh Baruch Hu has a plan that involves Shibud Mitzrayim. Really tells Avraham Avinu, he has this Eitzah that there's going to have to be Shibud Mitzrayim. That's a Klal Yisrael are going to be created. But how does that work with the idea of a Kodesh Baruch Hu of Mishpat, of Yosher? if we're going to be persecuted in Mitzrayim, we must deserve it. And in fact, it says in Zohar that Shibud Mitzrayim was a punishment for Mechiras Yosef. So there was some kind of Schar V'Einish. But if it's based on Schar V'Einish and we deserved it, because a lot of Sarim talk about this. How do you, and the one in this Brisman of Sarim, Hashem Baruch Hu is Maftiach, that there's going to be Shibud Mitzrayim. Hashem Baruch Hu obviously is all powerful, he's going to bring it about, there's no question he's going to bring it about, he's omnipotent. But on the other hand, the Zohar says that Hashem Baruch Hu is just Shibud Mitzrayim, it has to be deserved, and it was deserved because of Mechiras Yosef. According to the Zohar. So which is it? Is it a reaction to our behavior? Kodesh Baruch is punishing us with Shibud Mitzrayim? Or is it Kodesh Baruch is being proactive? His plan for history involves Shibud Mitzrayim. That's one instance, but it's a general problem. It's really this problem, this tension between the idea that Kodesh Baruch is omnipotent and the idea that he's just. If he's just, he's reacting to us. He doesn't do things to us that we don't deserve, and he gives us the freedom to do right or wrong, and he reacts accordingly. If he's omnipotent, Then how are we? Then he's not just, and he's forcing our hand. Either he's forcing our hand, then there's no freedom, then where's the justice there? Or he doesn't force our hand, and he just reacts regardless of how we behave. So that's also not just. So how do we reconcile these two things? It says the Ramchal. Says the Ramchal that there are really two hanogas. Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world according to two hanogas simultaneously. There's one hanoga, one way that a Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world, which the Ramchal calls the hanoga of Schar V'Einish. That is to say, the hanoga that's of Mishpat. Mishpat in the sense of Kodesh Baruch Hu behaves to us according to the way we deserve. And all of history can be viewed from that perspective of Anhogas HaMishpat. The Anhogas Schar V'Einish. Again, we don't know the details. We don't know how that... Chazal give a certain clone, but in the Proton we for sure don't know. We don't know exactly how... we see Moshe Rabbeinu has problems with Tzadik Rally, but we're not going into the problems of theodicy. But the Emunah that Sur Tomim Poli Kichol Droch of Mishpat, that's part of the Anhogas of the world, we believe. But Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world in a way that's Kichol Droch of Mishpat. That's determined by our behavior. On the other hand, says the Ramchal, Kodesh Baruch Hu has another anhoga, another perspective from which he runs the world, and that's also true at the same time. There's a separate anhoga, Ramchal, in which Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world in order to bring the world to the place that the world has to go, that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to bring the world, which is ultimately the goal is the goal of Ahoy Hashem Echad Shmei Echad, that the world should recognize that Hashem Echad Shmei Echad, the world should recognize Malchus Hashem, and that's the goal towards which everything has to conduce. Ramchal calls that the Anhogas HaYichud. Yichud coming from the word of Echad. The goal is that Kodesh Baruch Hu has a goal in history. History is not just he has a purpose. The purpose is that the world should come to the Akar that Hashem Echad, and everything has to reach. Everything in history has to bring about. Everything in history is the unfolding of that process of ultimately bringing that goal about. And Kodesh Baruch Hu has an ahogo throughout history, which he's bringing about Hashem Echad. That's the ultimate goal. And you can look at all of the events of history through that perspective of Anhogas HaYichud. And it has to make sense in terms of Anhogas HaYichud as well. Both Anhogas are going on simultaneously. There's Anhog of Schar V'Mishpat, which Kodesh Baruch Hu, we are free. Schar V'Mishpat implies, like the Rambam writes in the Chashuvah, Schar V'Einish implies that we're free. It doesn't make sense to have Schar V'Einish if we're not free, if we're under compulsion. Schar V'Einish implies that we're morally free, we're morally responsible. And that Kodesh Baruch Hu behaves towards us according to what we deserve, according to our behavior. Re'einu sat v'lechem z'chayim v'samovis, v'bachat v'lechayim, and so on. Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us a choice, and he reacts according to our choices. That's one hanhoga that's constantly going on in the world. That's the hanhoga of Schar V'Einish. That's the hanhoga in which there's p'chira chofshis. That's the point of view from which there's p'chira chofshis, and Kodesh Baruch Hu reacts to the way we behave. And that's true throughout. That has to be true. But says the Ramchal, the other perspective is also true. They're both true, even though it's hard for us to understand how they could both be going on simultaneously. Says the Ramchal, both things are true at the same time. There's also the Anhoga Sayyichud. There's also Anhoga that's constantly going on, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing about his purpose. And his purpose is ultimately Hashem Echad. It's Anhoga Sayyichud. I think the word Anhoga Sayyichud has maybe two senses. Anhoga Sayyichud in the sense that the goal is Hashem Echad. And Anhoga Sayyichud also in the sense that everything is Hashem Echad. Everything brings about Kodesh Baruch Hu's purpose. He's the one force that's really at work and bringing about. There's nothing that's going on in the world that's so to speak, a counterforce to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. Everything that happens in the world is bringing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. So it's Hashem Echad. Everything in the world is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the only koyach really. There's no koyach in the world that's not bringing about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And that's a separate anhoga, that's a separate perspective. And both things are true at the same time. The Koshin Simagid, Berliya Hasidus, he has a maimer, it's printed in the back of the Maral's Beragolah. The back of the Beragolah is three mamorim from the Koshin Simagid. And he develops the same idea that he gives him different names. He calls it Anhoga Sateva, so he gives him different names. Anhoga Tivis, Anhoga Toiris. He has different terminology. But he develops also the same idea that there's two anhogas going on at the same time. His language is very beautiful. He says it's kasha yiha oifon b'soicha oifon, taken from the Ma'aseh Merkava. It's like a wheel within a wheel. There's wheels within wheels. There's two anhogas and they're going on simultaneously. Kasha yiha oifon b'soicha oifon. The truth is that this idea of these two anhogas, even though as far as I know, I don't know that it's I don't know if it's explicit by Rishon or by Chazal, but it's certainly merumas in Chazal. Could be merumas in the Ravid also in the Hilchos Tshuva. And the Ravid talks about, maybe I'll just tell you briefly, he talks about the Ravid in Hilchos Tshuva, when he talks about the issue of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge of the future and Bechira Chofshes. So the Rambam, he lays out the problem, Kadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, how do we have Bechira Chofshes? Says the Rambam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's idea is different than our idea, we can't understand the way his idea works. And so on. The Ravid says he doesn't understand what the Rambam is doing. If the Rambam didn't have a teretz, why did he ask the kasha? The Rambam said only he has kasha for which he has a teretz. Says the Ravid, he has a different teretz. The teretz is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets up the world, he sets up the hanhoga of the mazolos, and he knows, he gives people the freedom to break free of the mazolos, to break free of the pattern of what's predetermined. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows if they're going to or not. It's a big arichus. I think what's going on there in that Rambam, that Ravid, is that they're really talking at cross purposes. The Rambam is talking about the epistemological problem. How can a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as is clear in the Rambam, the Maran Avukhu, how could a Kodesh Baruch Hu have knowledge of contingent propositions? So the Rambam says, "Lo yimach shavayim shavayim seichem." Kodesh Baruch Hu's knowledge is different than our knowledge. We can't apply our epistemological categories to Kodesh Baruch Hu's knowledge. I don't think that was the Ravid's concern at all. The Ravid's concern was closer to the concern of the Ramchal. How does Kodesh Baruch Hu bring about that on the one hand we're free, and he gives us freedom, as is implied in the whole idea of Schar Vayinish, and yet a Kodesh Baruch Hu brings about the future that he wants to bring about? If he's power, if we're free, then how does he bring about the future that he wants? So that the Ravid says, well, a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us the power to break free of the mazolos, but he knows if we're able to break free of the mazolos. In other words, a Kodesh Baruch Hu sets up the system in such a way that we're free, but a Kodesh Baruch Hu knows what the outcome is going to be. Anyway, because I don't want to spend time on the Ravid, but there also you have, I think, in the Ravid going on this tension, not the Rambam's tension between the Kodesh Baruch Hu's different kinds of knowledge, but the tension of how does Kodesh Baruch Hu bring about the future, let's say Yeshivat Mitzrayim, and yet give us the freedom to be deserving or not deserving. You have in Chazal even clear, more clearly. There's a Medrash Tanchuma in Vayeshev. Talk on the story of Mechiras Yosef. And the Pasuk, V'Yosef Hurad Mitzrayimah. So the Medrash says as follows, Zeu Shomer HaKosu, L'chu Chazu Mif'olos Hashem, Noiro Alilo Al Bnei Odom. Omer Rabbi Shulman Korcha, Af HaNoirois She'atom Mevi, even the things that you bring about that are neuro, I'll explain what that means in a second. Even the neurois that you bring about, you bring them about be'alilo. Be'alilo meaning with a justification. That's at a possibly, I don't know, pshutu shalmikra, alilo may mean just an action. But the Medrash is taking alilo here to mean with a justification. Even the neurois, even the neurodika things that you bring them about with a justification. Boyere. Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. He created a Malach HaMavos. That means it was from the very beginning part of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's plan that there should be death in the world. And yet, and that was B'yom HaRishon. V'odem nivra b'shishi. Man created on the sixth day. V'alila nitla b'yishu. Who hei b'yasem isa l'olam? And yet, how does death come about? Because of the chet of Odem HaRishon. Says the Medrash, so how does it work? It's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. He brought to create the Malachim Ovis from the beginning. Obviously, it was part of his plan. And yet, Odem HaRishon brings it about on his own. Through his chatoy. Says the Medrash, that's called Noira Alila. It's Noira. Noira, I think here means, it's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unfathomable, inscrutable plan. He has a plan for the world that involves the Malachim Ovis. It has to be. But at the same time, it has to work in the... So that's not Hogas HaYichud. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has... The world has to go a certain way. He has a certain scheme of things. But at the same time, it's Belila. It's justifiable as well. If not, it has to be justifiable on the level of Schar V'Einish. And therefore, there's Odom Rishon, and he has Bechira, and Odom Rishon eats from the Eitz Hadas, and therefore he's punished that there's Misa in the world. And both things are true at the same time. And then the Medrash goes on, and it talks about the story of Mechiras Yosef. Hoya HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevakesh l'kayim gzeres yodoy teida. The Shmuel wanted to bring about the Gzeiro, the Brisbane Absar, Shibud Mitzrayim. That's Noyer. That's part of Hakadosh Baruch Hu's plan. That's the way it has to go. Klai Yisrael has to be created through Shibud Mitzrayim. Vehebi Alila lechol dvarim elu. And yet it was done through Alila. It was done through a way that was justifiable in Schar V'Einish as well. Gidei Shiyoyev Yaakov as Yosef v'yisnei Echov. He set it up that Yaakov loved Yosef, therefore the brothers hated him. The Medrash is saying that this tension between these two anhogos, what the Ramchal calls the anhogos Schar V'Einish and the anhogos Hayichud, the Medrash calls that Noira Alila. The anhogos Noira, which Baruch Hu has a plan, has Brisbane Absorim. He has a plan that we can't fathom, we can't understand. He has a plan. This is how it has to happen, and yet there's an anhog of alilo. It has to be justifiable as well. Says the Medrash, that's what's going on by Mechir says, and the one and it's neira, it's Hakadosh Baruch Hu, it's the Brisbane Absar, but it has to be Shibud Mitzrayim, and yet at the same time it comes about through human actions and human failings, and through the anhog of what the Ramchal called the anhog of Schar V'Einish, and both things happen. Kasha yil ha'ifun b'seich ha'ifun, wheel within a wheel. Noira and it's Alila. The Medrash is telling me that that's really one of the themes of the story. That's the central theme, perhaps, of the story of Mechiras Yosef. And the truth is, you see it in Pshutish Mikra as well. The whole story of Mechiras Yosef, Kesedir, over and over again, you see this idea that on the one hand, everybody's acting freely. There's Bechira and there's Schar V'Einish. And the story of Mechiras Yosef is clearly a story of Schar V'Einish, of actions and their consequences. As the Shvatim keep saying, that's certainly one of the themes that the brothers' actions have consequences, and what happens to the brothers happens as a result of the Chet HaMechiras Yosef. At the same time, it's a story about how these actions that everybody is doing with their own agenda and with their own purpose at the same time brings about consequences that nobody in the story really intended, but that are fulfillment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And you have this all the time on several levels. First of all, explicit in the pasuk, Yosef says to the brothers, Atem chashavtem l'ra'ah, Elokim chashav l'tovah. You had one intention when you sold me, l'ra'ah. And Elokim chashav l'tovah, the same action that you did l'ra'ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a different intention. His plans were being fulfilled through you, even though that wasn't your intention at all. I think I have the same idea again. Maybe the Shmuz all by itself. I just mentioned briefly. When the brothers sell Yosef, so how much do they sell him for? How much do they get? What does it say? Esrim kasa, 20 dinar, 20 zuz. So the Gemara says to Yerushalmi, that it corresponds to the Pidyon HaBen. 20 dinarim is 5 shloim. So the Medrash is b'Teirush that the 5 shloim of Pidyon HaBen correspond to the Esrim Kosa from Mechiras Yosef. So what's the idea? I think it's a very powerful idea there. Why did the brothers sell Yosef? The brothers thought that Yosef is assuming the Bechira. He's assuming for himself. Yaakov is treating him as the Bechira. Yaakov gives him double, gives him extra sinus. Yaakov is treating him as the b'chor, because he's the ben ahuva. That's the parsha of the ben ahuva, the ben asnua. Yaakov is treating Yosef as the b'chor because that's how the shvatim see it. They treat him as the b'chor. Why is he the b'chor? Because he's the ben ahuva. And that's why the brothers are so angry at Yosef. They feel he's not the b'chor. They're doesn't deserve to be the b'chor. And if he's the b'chor, that means that they're disenfranchised. Because if he's the b'chor, that means the real wife is Rachel. So what happens to Bnei Leah? They must be being rejected. And we'll before Hashem explain. This is the backdrop to Mechiras Yosef. So the whole selling of Yosef is the Shvatim are saying he's not the b'chor. He doesn't have a right to be the b'chor. The Torah itself says Lo yuchal l'vakir es ben ahuva. It's not right. The ben ahuva does not get to be the b'chor. And that's why the brothers sell Yosef. They're going to deny him. They're going to show that he's not the b'chor. He's not going to be the b'chor. Venir amayul chalam Yosef. At the end of the day, though, in a sense, Yosef becomes the b'chor, because Yosef in the end gets Pishnayim. Ephraim and Menashe, Yosef really, in a sense, gets the b'chor. There's certain aspects of the b'chor. So how does that happen? How does Yosef get the b'chor? The Torah itself says that it's not right. The Shvatim are right. Lo yuchal l'vakir es ben ahuva. The Torah says that the ben ahuva does not become the b'chor. So how does Yosef become the b'chor? So I think that's what the Yerushalmi is saying. He becomes the Bechor through the Esrim Kosef that the Shvatim sell him for. The Shvatim sell him for Esrim Kosef. Esrim Kosef is Pinyan Aben. Pinyan Aben is a transfer of the Bechor. By selling him for Esrim Kosef, by taking Esrim Kosef, the Shvatim in a way are selling the Bechor to Yosef. And here you see, Mamish, that same kind of paradox or irony that you see throughout the whole story. The Shvatim have one set of intentions. And not only does what happens is different, but it's the exact opposite of what they intended. Through their very act of denying Yosef the Bechor, Yosef in fact becomes the Bechor. And then at the deepest level of all, you have at the very beginning of the story, when Yaakov sends Yosef away. So the post says, and says Rashi, which is the idea of the Medrash, that the whole story is to bring about the fulfillment of the Eitz HaMukah of the Brisman Absorim, of Brisman Absorim. The whole story of Mechiras Yosef is to bring about that Klal Yisrael should go down to Mitzrayim, which is the fulfillment of the Brisman Absorim. And that was not the intention of anybody in the story. That was not the intention of the brothers. It wasn't the intention of Yosef. It wasn't certainly the intention of Yaakov when he sent Yosef away. But that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intention. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings it about, but he doesn't bring it about by overriding everybody's Bechira Choshes. He doesn't bring it about by turning everybody into an automaton, they should all go down to Mitzrayim. He brings it about through the Hanhog of Schar V'Einish. Everybody's free. Everybody behaves in a way that's absolutely free, and everybody suffers the consequences of their own actions, and it's Schar V'Einish. And yet, at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Eitz HaMukah becomes fulfilled. That's what the Medrash calls Neira Lila Bnei Odom. Afgishata, maybe even the Dvarim Neroim that you're bringing about, the Brisman Absorim, be Alila Atam Nevi'im, but they're also justifiable on the level of Schar V'Einish. Kashi Oifim B'Seich Oifim. I want to suggest that this is really the answer to why it is that when Yaakov finally unites with Yosef, so Yaakov says Shema. This is the climax, this is the culmination of the story. And this is the final, this is the fulfillment of the Eitz HaMukah Shel Yosef Tzadik. That Klal Yisrael have to come down to Mitzrayim. Now finally all the strands are coming together. All of the stories, the story of Yosef, the story of the brothers, the story of Yaakov, all of these stories, each one of which was a drama in its own right. And finally now it's all coming, climaxing, and it becomes suddenly clear that the purpose of everything that's happened until now, the purpose of all of these stories, has been to bring about the fulfillment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. So Yaakov now makes a declaration, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He declares, he's makir. He recognizes that everything that's happened to him and to his sons, everything that's happened has really been a fulfillment of Dan Hogas HaYichud. What Ramchal calls Dan Hogas HaYichud. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Eitz HaMukah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan that has to ultimately be fulfilled through Shiva Mitzrayim, because through Shiva Mitzrayim ultimately the Gula is going to come about, the Gula that will be V'Hoy Hashem Echad U'Shma Yechad. And moreover, through all of this, Yaakov understands that Hashem Echad, that there is no other force at work in the world. That Hashem Echad, everything that's happening and seem to be independent and separate and free and responsible, all of these independent agents, including himself, including his sons, who are free and independent because there is the Hanog of Schar Vayinish, and it's Balil Atanavi, and it's all working on the in the wheels of Schar Vayinish as well. But at the same time, at the same time, it's Hashem Echad. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's been at work all the time, and he's brought about finally this conclusion, to which Yaakov would never have gone willingly to go down to Mitzrayim. He's brought about finally this conclusion, which is the kiyum of the Haftocha of the Bris Ben Havsarim. So Yaakov therefore declares now at this culmination of the story that he understands that everything that's happening, it's been happening, even though it seemed all different alilos, but what really has been happening is the kiyum of the Eitz Hamukah, is the kiyum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, and that's what he declares, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad.